2SER 107.3, and this week we're probing the dark recesses of the mind.
Oogum boogum.
Very scary.
Did you wet yourself?
It could happen to you.
Stick around, even if that scene does disturb you too much.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Triumph and Disaster is a new record from We Lost the Sea.
Yep.
We last spoke when your previous LP, Departure Songs, came out.
Yes.
And it kind of seems very apt that we're sitting in here talking about this new record, one that tells a story about the climate crisis and the post-apocalyptic Earth as parts of New South Wales burn,
yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
And we haven't even reached summer yet to begin with. So yeah. That's dire times for everyone. Really, going back to that previous record, Departure Songs, after pouring out all that energy and emotion after Chris's death, did you already have a clear mind with what you wanted to do with the next record straight away?
Not exactly. It took a little while. And I think we were talking about what we wanted to do the next record about in a tour van somewhere around Australia. I think we're heading into Melbourne in one day, and we started to talk about it. But I think maybe in general, as a general answer to that question, would be that we kind of wanted to not be so sad.
Okay.
and so then we chose the end of the world as a theme. So I don't know. We don't do things kind of lightly. I think intentionally, before the theme sort of formed itself, we wanted to do something that was for ourselves, I guess, just kind of not shake off the shackles, that's the wrong term, but free ourselves from that the Departure Songs period, in terms of instead of trying to write A Gallant Gentleman Part 2, which kind of we sort of tried and it failed because the intention wasn't there, that the realness and the emotion wasn't there that was around when we wrote Departure Songs. So trying to imitate that felt immediately fake. So
okay.
We wanted to play some big riffs and to rock out a little bit more. We'd be playing Departure Songs as a full set in Europe and China and Australia, and it starts with The Gallant Gentleman and into Bogotiri. It's all quiet, it doesn't really kind of kick off until halfway through the record, and it's big riffs and fun times, and I know that's all about the builds and the atmosphere and the emotion and all that sort of stuff, and we don't want to ever lose that. But I think one of the first things was let's just write a big riff, let's open with a big riff, and that's kind of where Towers, the first song from the record, the new record, came from.
I think Towers took half a year to put together.
It was a punish of a process. It was all self-exploration, and I don't think we allowed ourselves to enjoy the songwriting as much as we wanted to, and songwriting is a really beautiful thing, and it's difficult in a band of six people, but when it comes together, it's really awesome. And I think I do stand by the record and believe that there are some of our best moments on this record. And I think the emotion finds its way through eventually. It's all up to interpretations. People have said, it's not like Departure Songs, so it's not as good. Or it's not like Departure Songs, so that's great and I love it. So whatever, people will make up their own mind and that's totally fine. But for us, yeah, it was a tough self-exploration in writing a new record with that pressure of Departure Songs on our shoulders, and
yeah.
That we didn't really even expect when we wrote Departure Songs. Sort of almost serendipity the way that it was received. And we're already talking about album five. We're all right, okay, there's no pressure this time. For me personally, I cared a lot about it, which you have to care, but and I'm not saying I don't want to care, I just don't want to have that pressure hanging over us. Or maybe it was our own intentional pressure that we put ourselves in the room when we were rehearsing and writing, and it was just always present. I don't know, I just felt like that anyway, and I think that next time we just kind of want to free ourselves of how are we going to back up Departure Songs? Everything we wrote for Triumph and Disaster was this is kind of like Bogotiri, so maybe that's okay. It's let's stop doing that, let's just sort of have fun with it.
Do you have to be tortured though to write music?
That's a good question. Many people will answer that differently. I would say yes and no. I think when you're tortured, for me, I still have to be in the right headspace to feel like I'm good enough or energized enough to write. Otherwise, I'll just sit on the couch in fetal position. Like, so, and like, while I've all got the emotions and the feels, I don't have the energy or the motivation to go and pick up my guitar. But I mean, other people will answer that differently.
So you went to a place on the coast over a weekend to try and like get some ideas going on.
Yeah.
Do you know how that place is at the moment? Seeing as how, you know, there's fires ravaging all over New South Wales.
That's a good question, actually.
Have you kind of checked in, see what's going on?
Yeah, I probably should, because they're right in one of the danger zones. It's down in Shoalhaven. Yeah, I should shoot them an email, because when we finished that session, they were really stoked that we'd done that. And
cool.
We were like, are you sure we're not too loud? We'll finish by 8 p.m. and they came to us at the on the Sunday when we're packing up, and they're like, oh, guys, you're leaving. We're like, you actually being sarcastic? Like, no. It's amazing. Listen to you guys like develop these new songs that nobody's heard before. And we sort of sat in silence for like half an hour in the living room, and out, like, they live in a little place bolted onto the main house. And they usually hire this place out for weddings and stuff like that. Coincidentally, then one of their next clients, wedding clients, the groom was a huge fan of We Lost the Sea, and he found out on our socials that we'd been there, and he was extra stoked that he was getting married in the house that We Lost the Sea was writing their new record in. So yeah, that's kind of cool.
There is some sounds on this record that I feel like are quite new for the band. There's the muted trumpet on Dust, I think it is.
Yeah.
There's a bit of slide guitar on Distant Shores as well. And I don't know if it's just me, but I don't really feel like I've ever heard the keys before when it comes to We Lost the Sea. Is that part of the evolution of being a post-rock band? You have to explore those new sonic territories of new instruments?
Definitely, yes. Those elements did come forward a lot more with this record. The keys thing is interesting because we've noticed that as well, and I think Matt Kelly's become much more of an integral part with the main parts of the songwriting, whereas before it was sort of added on like where he could fit, or the guitars weren't super loud, or where, you know, it's hard to fit in between three guitars and then bass lines, and then where do I fit the keys or the synths and stuff. And we just went, no, let's just kind of like all have a crack. The evolution question's interesting, I think, yes. There was an intentional decision to do something, we'll try to do something different. I feel that we tried to push ourselves, our sound, and I guess we are a post-rock band. I'm trying to maybe selfishly leave that moniker behind because I kind of feel like it's limiting. How about just an instrumental band? It's like, oh, so if you're a post-rock band, then you have to be compared to these other five main post-rock bands, and if you sound anything like them, then it's generic and boring and you haven't pushed the envelope. And it's just like, okay, like, we really, really tried. So I'm sorry if we've disappointed those six people on the internet, but it's happened. But yeah, look, I think that was an intentional thing. Slide guitar was me. I sort of fumbled my way through it. I'm in no regards a slide guitarist, but played around some open tunings and sort of made that up in the studio. So if I have to play that live, I'm going to have to relearn it, which is like a few things that happened right at the last minute in the studio, but that's where the magic kind of happens. And once it sort of came together, we understood what we were doing a lot more, and I think the studio session was really awesome, and our engineer/producer Greg Norman, not the golf guy.
I was just thinking that.
No, he's one of the main engineers at Electrical Audio in Chicago. I think his influence in production and the way that he approached the session, and we only had 7 days of tracking, so we kind of smashed it out in big 12-hour days, 13-hour days, and he managed that really well. And at the end, when we sat down and listened to it, all of these things that were like, oh, wow, you did that? That's cool. Oh, the keys in this are really awesome. And yeah, all of those things. So yeah.
Nice, yeah. Nice. You've been looking after the artwork a lot, especially the past two records. It's really come into its own thing. The artwork on Departure Songs, as well as the children's book that came out with this album, Triumph of Disaster. Seeing as how you are an instrumental band, does that artwork kind of make up where the vocals would have been in a way? Do you have to kind of have that setting of, visuals?
We do. I mean, we want to. And okay. It just was a thing that evolved out of Departure Songs. The big thematic album, artwork, big cinematic soundtracky kind of vibe going on. Yeah, I really pushed myself to make artwork, again, a big part of the record. The way I've been describing is the music happens in the background. The children's book is the sort of heart of what we're trying to say. And instead of having a booklet full of facts and figures and bleak information that's coming out at the moment, it was more like, how do we get all of this really big, grim, bleak, apocalyptic stuff into a place where people can sort of relate to it. And okay. It's more of a surrealistic, dystopian children's book with a really nice message of hope and love, which is what this album is also about. It's not just like, it's just about climate change, which everyone's like, oh, that's so boring. It might be boring to some people, but it's kind of like literally happening around us right now. So the heart of the story was the book and the soundtrack is the music. And as opposed to like, this song relates to this art, this song relates to that. It was more of a whole complete package that we wanted to do like a short story and then realize that's a ridiculous idea because we're not writers. We're understaffed. The influence was kind of like an apocalyptic Where the Wild Things Are. If you break down the actual story of Where the Wild Things Are, it fits on like half an A4 page. It's a beautiful prose. It's a beautiful message. And the illustrations make up where the words sort of fall away. So we kind of wanted to do that. With the record, yeah.
I do see lots of parallels between We Lost the Sea and another instrumental band from Sydney, Dumb Saint. You know, of course, because they're being instrumental. But I really liked when Dumb Saint put out their last record, Panorama.
Yeah.
And they had like a short movie for it as well.
Yeah.
Would that be a path that you're maybe interested in going down?
No, yeah. Those guys worked really hard on that. And I saw how hard they were. I get it, and I applaud them for doing that, definitely. But each band will do things differently. Just because we're an instrumental band doesn't mean we have to have the visuals.
Okay.
But I really think it helps create an immersive experience for the listener. And I think I sort of dug myself a hole with Departure Songs that I was kind of like, my personal goal was like, I need to do that again. But I think in terms of other bands, obviously, they'll answer that differently. One of my biggest influences would be Godspeed You Black Emperor, and they play with no lights. They have a projector. They have a projectionist that tours with them, does reel-to-reel stuff, and it's all kind of loosely in time with their music. And it's such a like a sensory overload, and I think it really adds to the experience live. Definitely does.
For a first time in a while, there is vocals on the record. You've got Sydney local Louise, aka Wartime Sweethearts,
yes.
On the album. She appears on the final track, and I think originally its working title was like a gospel tune.
Right,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Where did you get that info from? That's a good one. Yeah, maybe it's... Yeah, it was called Gospel Song as the working... We were actually going to just call it Gospel Song, but no, I think Mother's Hymn sort of summed it up. And she was pregnant at the time. She sung the song as well, which was very apt.
Again, the cover art.
Yeah.
Virgin Mary silhouette.
Yeah,
maybe,
kind of.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Yes. Is this like not so much a record about climate change and, you know, post-apocalyptic, but could it be a religious record in a way, or maybe like a devotional album?
No, I mean, no. Mark, when Mark hears this, he's going to laugh. I'm very anti-theist, I suppose. I don't mind poetic references to that kind of those connotations and that kind of like the literature and the art simile surrounding those kind of things. It wasn't until I finished the cover art that I looked back and someone was like, it's kind of like it could be Mother Mary, and I was like, well, in this way, one of the chapters that I'd wrote was referencing like in a very juvenile way, like, your gods have failed you now kind of thing. So maybe the sun represents the earth and the mother represents us trying to protect it and not being able to protect it. And the boy in the story dies, and that's kind of like the letting go of our innocence and our trust and our hope. But at the end, he delivers this final message that kind of ties it all together, hopefully. But the cover, I guess, is more of the mother looking over the sun, or Mother Earth overlooking us, or some kind of connotation to that. The gospel thing was just, it just came about. A couple of the guys, well, Mark mostly, had this idea of this progression that sort of sounded, and as soon as we put like church organ stuff over it, it was just like, that progression is straight up a gospel song, and we were like, let's just rock with it, let's just roll with it. And obviously Louise's beautiful vocals just made that song, and we just kind of came together in the studio and went, okay, that's a song. That's like something we've never would have done otherwise, and it's something we sort of, it was explored on the spot. So yeah, I think it came together really nicely.
So it does end on quite a euphoric note, but could you ever end a record on a negative note? Do you need to have that sense of, I guess, fulfilling and closure and happiness to deliver a good record?
It's a good question, because I deliberated over that. I think the band, we all deliberated over that. Initially we wanted it just to be bleak and finish on a like, you're dead,
yeah,
it's our fault, goodbye. I just felt that it was kind of, I don't know, maybe people argue this, but I felt that was maybe a bit too obvious or a bit too cliche. But The Last Son, which is the last song before Mother's Hymn, if we'd left off Mother's Hymn and just finished with that, it still would have been a good ending, I feel, for the album, and it would have kind of summed up this apocalyptic thing that we were going for. And if you're going to tell people that it's all for nothing and you're just going to die, and even if it was like a lament or like another version of a swan song where it's like singing for the end, it's singing for the sun, it's singing for us, it's singing for the planet, it's, you know, are we really too late? Leave that open-ended. And I don't know, I just wanted it to be an uplifting ending. If that song didn't come together, it wouldn't have been on the album, so it would have finished a lot differently.